It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. Well, a growing wave of anti-Semitism on college campuses, school presidents and their woke culture are now reaping what they have sown. Former Trump advisor Stephen Miller is going to weigh in on the whole story. And then somebody's got to tell me how you can retroactively steal an election in 2016 by making undisclosed payments in 2017. Just ask Alvin Bragg. I guess he'll know. Kerry Kupek-Urban is going to talk about that. My pal Kevin Hassett on the new currency wars with Japan and China. And the planet's getting cleaner, and the Biden greenies are having a bad Earth Day. Senator John Hovind of North Dakota on that. But first up, Jackie Heinrich's got the latest on rising anti-Semitism across the U.S. Jackie, welcome. What you got?
Well, Larry, since Saturday, Columbia University has decided to offer virtual classes for the rest of the semester to ensure the safety of students. And New England Patriots owner and big university donor Robert Kraft pulled his support from the university. There have also been growing calls for the university's president to resign. But President Biden has not used any of his time, in front of cameras at least, to address any of this. In his remarks today, there was no mention from him. He also didn't address it in his Earth Day event yesterday, except for when Fox shouted a question as he was leaving, and he condemned both sides. Listen.
Do you condemn the anti-Semitic protests on college campuses?
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians.
Biden declined to weigh in on whether Columbia University's president should resign. Pennsylvania Democrat Senator John Fetterman, though, did not hesitate, calling the protests, quote, anti-Semitic, unconscionable, and dangerous. Add some tiki torches, and it's Charlottesville for these Jewish students. Biden said many times the white supremacy seen in Charlottesville was what prompted him to run for president. He has slammed former President Trump for saying there were very fine people on both sides. In fact, Biden said that again today. But Biden's made no mention of the anti-Semitic protests in his 25 tweets since Saturday, including 9 about climate. There was a strong White House statement over the weekend, but it was from Deputy Press Secretary Andrew Bates, who defended the president on Air Force One today.
In the president's Passover statement, he directly addressed the vile comments that circulated over the weekend with a call to action, echoing the rhetoric of terrorist organizations, especially in the wake of the worst massacre committed against the Jewish people since the Holocaust, is despicable. We are, of course, monitoring these situations closely.
Biden's Passover statement didn't get into that detail. It did call on Americans to speak out against anti-Semitism at schools, online, and in communities. But it came after 4 paragraphs about the rituals of Passover, his efforts to get a ceasefire and hostage deal, and also a 2-state solution and more humanitarian aid into Gaza. So far, though, the president, at least on camera, has not lived up to his call to call out anti-Semitism. Mm. Larry.
All right, Jackie Heinrich, thank you very much for that whole rundown. Now, folks, you probably think I'm going to riff on anti-Semitism and DEI on the college campuses. I'm going to save that to my interview with my good pal Steve Miller in just a few moments. Instead, I want to talk about, just quickly, the failure of Joe Biden's Green New Deal Climate Bank ATM and the failure of all the Biden-subsidized offshore windmill projects, okay? This is an Earth Day follow-through. Many of you may not know this, just to go back in time, but the first windmills were built in 1200 A.D. in Holland. You can see a picture of them up on the full screen. They were vertical, and they were land-based, and I'm sure they worked reasonably well for their time. It was a technological breakthrough, and it was created to grind grains. By the 19th century, there were more than 9,000 windmills in Holland and an important power source. They were mainly used for various industrial uses. Okay, trouble is, many of today's Joe Biden greenies want us to go back to the 19th century. Actually, I suspect many of the greenies want us to go back to the 13th century, but that's a separate topic. Here's the problem. The Bidens have spent a fortune on subsidizing these gigantic offshore windmill projects, which just don't work. Please read today's superb Wall Street Journal editorial on the collapse of New York State wind development. GE has lost a fortune, $1.4 billion loss last year, following a $2.2 billion loss the year before. New York State subsidies come from the misnamed Inflation Reduction Act, which spent well over $1 trillion to subsidize everything outside of fossil fuels. These huge wind turbines, apparently, they fall over, require extensive repairs, and are completely non-economic. The Journal editorial states that more than a dozen of these projects in the U.S. and Europe have been canceled or delayed in just the last year alone. Meanwhile, the cost of offshore wind, at least in New York, is about $150 per megawatt hour. But wait a second. The wholesale price for natural gas is around $30 a megawatt hour. So you would think businesses and consumers would go for the cheaper natural gas. But no, natural gas is the fossil fuel. And the greenies don't like fossil fuels. Actually, natural gas is a clean burning fuel and is part of the long-term solution, both for economic growth and climate change. In the last 20 years or so, the increased use of natural gas has led to huge reductions in lead, particulates, smog, and carbon monoxide. In fact, according to the Committee to Unleash Prosperity hotline, over the last five decades, our GDP is up nearly 800%, while energy consumption has increased only 29%. And get this, carbon emissions have actually fallen 60%. This is the biggest carbon decline of any of the major economies in the world, by far. Much of this grand clean air progress can be traced to the increased use of natural gas. But the Bidens are stubborn. They won't acknowledge it. Heck, even Europe has reclassified natural gas as a clean-burning fuel. Instead, the Bidens are doing everything they can to stop, for example, liquid natural gas development and exports. And, of course, they celebrated Earth Day by closing down 13 million acres in the Alaska Federal Petroleum Reserve. And if Mr. Biden were to be reelected with his Green New Deal gang, then get ready for massive electricity and other power shortages plaguing the American economy and everything in it. And at that point, 13th century Holland's going to look better and better. All right, now, that's my riff on that subject. We will talk about all this later with North Dakota Senator John Hoeven. But now, after that digression, I'm going to talk to my good pal Steve Miller about this education catastrophe now unfolding in America. So welcome back, Steve Miller. Pardon me for my digression, but I wanted to get in a little Earth Day stuff. Now, Steve Miller is a former senior advisor to President Trump. He is the president of America First Legal. Steve, I just want to begin with Joe Biden's obsessions with DEI that I think have spawned this wave of anti-Semitism and campus violence. Let me get your take on that piece of the story.
Well, yes, it's all connected, Larry. So DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, is about using the power of the state to advance a radical left Marxist agenda. It wraps itself in the banner of race, but fundamentally, Larry, it's a vehicle for establishing state control over every aspect of our lives. And they're pushing this poisonous ideology to deconstruct Western systems, Western heritage, Western beliefs, and Western law. Individualism, limited government, all of it borders everything. They're pushing it in our universities day after day. And of course, that's leading to the kinds of radical pro-Hamas demonstrations that are taking place now. So, of course, Joe Biden owns that, every bit of it. But this is also connected to the war against Donald Trump in our legal system as well, too. because justice is no longer blind, Larry. They're not using the Department of Justice. They're not using left-wing prosecutors in New York and elsewhere to go after Hamas supporters in our country who are terrorizing Jews, terrorizing Americans, and terrorizing their fellow students. They're using the power of law, the power of the state, only to persecute their enemies, not to go after criminals, not to go after drug dealers, not to go after felons, not to go after criminal aliens, not to go after even murderers, not to go after Hamas sympathizers. The power of the state is being used to go after Joe Biden's political enemies. So all of this is connected. It's about the destruction of the Western system of law in this country.
I don't see any, Steve Miller, I don't see any effort by Biden or his Justice Department or his FBI, for example, to deal with the crimes of hate speech and hate crime actions. I don't see any deal. Every one of these schools should be subjected to that discipline. There are laws on the books for many years against hate crimes and hate speech, for that matter. And I don't see these presidents, Columbia, Yale, doesn't really matter. I don't see any of them. Nor do I see the trustees of these schools taking any action. And so my question is, why? These are clearly hate crimes. Why aren't they doing something about it? And the they includes Biden and his Justice Department.
Yeah, this is civil rights law is what we're talking about here, Larry. So as an example, just a few days ago, maybe your audience is familiar with this. Joe Biden and his EEOC, right, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, took legal action against a chain of convenience stores for having background checks, just background checks, saying that violated civil rights law. And yet here on these college campuses, you have plain black letter violations of federal civil rights law. Students' fundamental civil rights are being violated through violent intimidation, through aggressive physical confrontation, clear violations of civil rights. Biden's Justice Department is nowhere to be seen. Joe Biden is nowhere to be seen because, again, he's not using civil rights law to uphold equal and impartial justice. He uses it only to go after his enemies, to advance his agenda, to go after the targets that he and his DOJ and his FBI have in their sights. There are many threats, Larry, to the future of this country and the West. But surely the greatest of them all is the politicization of our law enforcement from an instrument of justice and neutrality into an instrument of political vengeance. And that is what is happening every day under Joe Biden.
What about on the cultural front, Steve Miller? What about the role or the non-role of the Education Department? And what about the role of federal funding of all these schools that have practicing woke cultures and have permitted this kind of anti-Semitism? I mean, very little, other than dispersing students, other than calling off classes for a little while, I don't really see what Columbia has done to change it. At first, I thought maybe the president was going to be tough, but she hadn't done anything since then. We know that Harvard has flunked. We know that Yale is in turmoil. We know that NYU is, a lot of schools are in turmoil. I just don't see anything changes. So I think to myself, what could the federal government do in a Trump administration? What would a Steve Miller do if you were running the Education Department? What's out there? What options could be looked at, Steve Miller?
Well, I mean, Donald Trump has made clear that he would use the purse strings at DOE, which are subsidizing these schools, in order to stop their lawless behavior. You don't have the right to terrorize Jews on your campus. You don't have the right to terrorize Americans on your campus. You don't have the right to terrorize citizens on your campus because they're not in support of Hamas. Nor do you have the right as a foreign student in this country to support Hamas. You get your visa revoked, you get sent out of here. So he's been clear, since the Department of Education subsidizes all of this nonsense, that you use that leverage to bring these universities into compliance with federal law. It's very straightforward. And I would also note, while we're on this subject, that the Department of Homeland Security can, with just a simple phone call, say to these universities, you don't get access to our foreign student visa program if you're a safe haven for Hamas sympathy. If you're going to be a safe place for Hamas, then why in God's name are we going to let you have unfettered access to foreign student visas? So all of this, the federal government has enormous tools to stop Jew hatred, America hatred, West hatred, Christian hatred on these campuses, and to tell these Biden radicals, these pro-Hamas Biden radicals, that you're not in charge, the taxpayer is in charge.
Steve, before we lose you, here, I just want to play some sound from President Trump. I don't know, it was this morning or yesterday. Take a listen.
What's going on at the college level and the colleges, Columbia, NYU, and others, is a disgrace. And it's really on Biden. He has the wrong signal. He's got the wrong tone. He's got the wrong words. He doesn't know who he's backing. And it's a mess.
I mean, I think it's a mess. If these colleges persist in supporting DEI, in permitting anti-Semitism, if they don't make significant changes, then the president, working through the Department of Education and maybe Homeland Security, I like that idea, the government has to take action. And at least at one level, federal funding is the place to go. But also, these schools have to measure up. I mean, the DEI, you know, we've had Professor Dershowitz on, Steve, and we've had other guests. This diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is left-wing, you know, cultural Marxism, it's just pure woke stuff. It's also hatred stuff. It's deep into the sinews of all of these universities, just like it is, I guess, throughout the federal government, unfortunately. But they have to cleanse themselves of this. I don't see them doing that, Steve Miller. I don't see them cleansing themselves. These disturbances will come and go, but what exactly is going to change?
Nothing changes unless you use the levers of power on behalf of the taxpayers to change it. They're not only receiving direct subsidy in the form of actual cash grants, but these universities, which have massive endowments, by the way, get preferential tax treatment. And as you know, all of the student debt that's accrued is subsidized, too, in the form of student loans. And so at every level, these are being subsidized. These universities are being funded. They're being backed. They're being financed by taxpayers. Why would we finance hatred of our own country? DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, is a form of radical racism. Why would we finance racism? Why would we finance hatred of Jews, hatred of Christians, hatred of Americans? Why would we pay for any of that? There has to be an accounting. There has to be complete top-to-bottom reform of these universities, which are and have been living off the federal government for generations. Their entire business model, Larry, only exists because it's backed by Uncle Sam. Without that, these universities aren't anything. So there has to be action, and there will be action.
Yes, well, let us hope. All right. Steve Miller, thank you for all that. We appreciate it very, very much. Take care. All right, folks, coming up here on Kudlow. Somebody's got to tell me, it's another subject, but also difficult. How can you retroactively steal an election that occurred in 2016 when your undisclosed payments were made in 2017? Like, I don't get that. We'll talk about it with former Trump Department of Justice Counselor Carrie Kupek-Urban. And remember, you can catch Kudlow Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. every day, right here on Fox Business. And if for some reason you can't get us at 4, please just text your favorite 9-year-old, and she will show you how to DVR the show. I'm Kudlow. Lots more to do.
It gives me a feeling of appreciation, brings me back to reality.
Some say nature heals.
It just centers you and it can bring you back to, you know, what is really important in life.
Breathing in the crisp air several thousand feet high, hearing the birds chirp, leaves rustle in the wind, feeling like one with the earth. It's an experience people crave, an escape from our busy lives.
We had visited this area a couple times before, and we just fell in love with it.
It's why millions of people look at the Great Smoky Mountains as a true vacation, a chance to hit the pause button on work or stress.
The next thing that we need to do here is to put in the kitchen cabinets.
Yeah, we're waiting for this last one from...
Brandon and Emma Musto found peace in the Smokies, but saw more than just a vacation within the mountain ranges of East Tennessee. They saw an opportunity.
We kind of decided this is a great place to start a business because the weather in the Smokies is really unique. There's almost like there's not an off season here because the weather is so temperate. So even in the winter, it's very temperate. And unlike other national parks, you can still go hiking and there's still so much you can do and enjoy outdoors.
What you'd usually consider slower seasons, like winter, aren't so slow in the Smokies. In fact, Christmas week is historically their busiest week every year because you can still enjoy almost all the park's wonders. While it could be below freezing up in Clingman's Dome, the tallest peak in the Smokies, and covered in several inches, if not feet, of snow or ice, down in Gatlinburg, it's usually warmer and more manageable. You can still take a hike and immerse yourself in nature without much limitation.
We had seen so many of the national parks, and they're all beautiful in their own regard. They've all got their pros. But the reason we decided to come out here, I think, is, again, it mixes all the beauty and all the wonder, but with comfort, you know? So we loved areas like Montana and Wyoming, but we're not snow people. We can't handle the extreme cold. And so I think this is really, it's pretty similar in terms of beautiful mountains and lush forests, but the winters aren't so super cold. Initially, the plan was to come down at the same angle.
With the help of their family, the two decided to take the leap and work on creating what they hope visitors will see as a breath of fresh air.
The dream comes from the creative process and the desire to build something cool.
By cool, they mean it's not your typical cabin in the woods.
We wanted to stay true to the wooden cabin in the woods feeling, but we wanted to add a modern spin to it. And we wanted to make it a little bit more elevated, a little bit more luxurious. The entire property is called Valhalla Cabins, and each cabin belongs to one of the Viking gods. So the one we're on right now is Thor's cabin.
One of the reasons we decided to go with the A-frame is because they're unique, because you don't see them very often. And I think that kind of adds to the feeling of we're going on a vacation. Look at this crazy unique cabin we could stay in.
Wherever you are, whenever you want it, Fox News Digital is the world according to Fox. The top headlines other sites won't touch. Unmatched coverage you won't get anywhere else. And the stories that keep America clicking. No one does it like FoxNews.com. Plus, download the Fox News app to get breaking news, alerts, and all your favorite shows on the go. And if you can't watch, listen.
The Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast.
I'm Brett Baer.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Fox News Digital, the world according to Fox.
So we turn to the Trump trials now, and the question is, how do you retroactively steal an election in 2016 with undisclosed payments in 2017? I mean, I don't get that. Joining us now, Carrie Kupek-Urban, Fox News legal editor, former Trump DOJ counselor, Justice Department counselor. Carrie, I'm reading Andy McCarthy's excellent piece in the New York Post, and he said basically, this whole thing is predicated on the notion that Donald Trump stole the 2016 election, even though they don't come out and say that. But he goes into it. He says Trump orchestrated a scheme to suppress stories that could have damaged 2016 campaign. That's what they're trying to say. But wait a minute. The payments weren't made until February through December 2017. But the election was in 2016. So I don't get that. Maybe you can explain it. Or maybe only Alvin Bragg knows.
Yeah, it's because it doesn't make much sense. And
Suppressing stories also is not a crime. Entering into an NDA is not a crime. A catch and kill scheme is not a crime. These were the questions, Larry, I had sitting there yesterday during opening arguments, and I thought to myself, when the number three person from DOJ who left that spot to go work for Alvin Bragg and was standing there presenting oral arguments, saying things like, this is about election fraud, plain and simple, I thought to myself, how? What exactly makes this election fraud?
Now, this chap, Colangelo, I think this brings Joe Biden very much in play. Colangelo was number three guy in the Justice Department. He's a presidential appointee. Now he's left his job in order to take Alvin Bragg's job, in effect, running this trial, because Bragg can't do it. Doesn't that bring Joe Biden very close to this? Doesn't it look like the White House is orchestrating this?
It's really surprising, just given the fact that that spot at DOJ, it's a highly coveted position. I think probably as much, maybe just a notch below being attorney general. And that's because typically it's the straight path to becoming a corporate bigwig, making a lot of money. So for someone to step down from that spot at the Department of Justice to go work for a local prosecutor, you've got to be a true believer. It has to be pretty personal. I mean, just to give you some examples, Larry, one of my colleagues who held that spot when I was at DOJ, she's now a top person at Walmart. When Rudy Giuliani held that spot in the early 1980s, he went on to head SDNY. But this gentleman went to go work for Alvin Bragg in bringing this case against Donald Trump.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's a political thing. I don't understand NDAs. Why are they against the law? I mean, again, Andy McCarthy is writing, these non-disclosed accounts, these are used to settle civil litigation all the time. And in fact, people will hide information, but both parties agree to it. That's the whole point of an NDA. So why is that illegal? Why is that bad? And why does that mean that Trump somehow stole the 2016 election?
Right. Donald Trump entering into an NDA with Stormy Daniels is not illegal. It's not. Now, maybe it's sleazy or maybe people don't like that, but dirty doesn't equal illegal. So that's fact number one. Two, labeling that as a legal expense in one's ledger, I don't really see, Larry, the problem with that. I mean, compensation for an NDA could be characterized as a legal expense. Now, I suppose the state wants, they would have liked for him to say reimbursement to Michael Cohen to pay off Stormy Daniels, but at the end of the day, it can fall within that bucket. And then lastly, it's not even clear that Donald Trump knew how this expense was characterized in the ledger. Apparently, it was done by someone else, a Trump Tower, a lower-level associate, who was told to do so by her boss. So, again, it comes back to what exactly is the crime here.
Exactly. Carrie, let's talk about the gag order. Let me get this right. Michael Cohen, who is supposedly a serial liar, he's allowed to take shots at Trump wherever, whenever, news shows, podcasts, whatever. I guess Stormy Daniels, too, other people. But Trump can't fight back. Now, I've never heard of a gag order like this before. And, of course, we are in the middle of a presidential election. He is the primary opponent of Joe Biden. I mean, this is so rigged. This is so lawfare. This is so weaponized. It's beyond belief to me.
It is fundamentally unfair for this judge to have imposed a gag order against Donald Trump and not against Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen, even yesterday, was speaking publicly about this case and Donald Trump. He has a podcast where apparently he talks obsessively about Donald Trump because this is how he makes his living. And yet we know Michael Cohen has done what? Lied to Congress, lied to the court, lied to the media. And, you know, Donald Trump makes an interesting argument when he says it's also an unconstitutional restraint on his speech. Do you know who else made that argument, Larry, just last year? The ACLU, which is no friend of Donald Trump, but they filed an amicus brief in the civil fraud case saying that they were very concerned about an order being imposed against the former president. Because, look, one could argue that everything from now until the election is political speech. This case wouldn't have been brought against him if he hadn't been president, if he wasn't potentially going to be president. So restraining him in this way impedes his ability to run for office.
Right. It's a campaign. It's a presidential campaign. He's supposed to be able to talk. People are supposed to be able to hear him and listen.
And that's what the ACLU said in their brief.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. Carrie Kupek-Urban, thank you very much for sharing.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. All right, folks, coming up next on Kudlow, Kevin Hassett, on Donald Trump calling out the currency wars with Japan and China. You won't believe but how the yen has completely collapsed. We'll stick around. We got my pal Kevin Hassett. We'll talk more about that. And what's GDP going to look like when it comes out on Thursday? I'm Kudlow. Be right back.
The Bottom Line with Dagan and Duffy on Fox Business.
We view the world the same way.
I'm sure we'll have some disagreements, but you don't want to get her mad.
No, you don't.
The Bottom Line with Dagan and Duffy on Fox Business. Invested in you.
Los Alamos, New Mexico.
They built a city out in the middle of nowhere that nobody knew about and no one was allowed to get to, except for the people who were working on it, and they might as well have been working on the moon.
Sprawling housing developments, dozens of high-tech labs, hundreds of military guards and thousands of civilian contractors. And everyone had to keep the secret.
The scientist and the general had to balance the science with 130,000 people that needed to be involved and also keeping it a secret. So that's a pretty tough thing to do. I'm not sure you could do it today.
Colonel Paul Tibbetts loaded the atom bomb called Little Boy into the B-29 named for his mother, the Enola Gay. His target, Hiroshima.
So the instant he hears bombs away, Tibbetts just grabs the control yoke and cranks it over, probably with the co-pilot as well, as hard as they can. And this massive airplane, the biggest bomber ever built, rolls practically like a fighter and dives for the dirt. He's trying to get airspeed. He's trying to get away.
Told him not to look back at it, but he couldn't help it. So he looks back and he sees this absolutely extraordinary explosion. Of course, there was devastation on the ground. It's almost complete destruction, an entire city that had been leveled. But he felt that he had succeeded in ending the war.
But Hirohito did not even respond to the attack.
Honor was so intrinsic to the Japanese culture, and that giving up or surrendering was completely out of the question.
We have to remember that at the time that bomb was dropped, as we'd gotten closer and closer to Japan, our casualties were getting higher and higher. The Japanese resistance is increasing. The reason we know they weren't about to surrender was because after we had dropped one atomic bomb on Japan, they still didn't surrender.
Truman ordered a second bomb, the plutonium version, dropped on Nagasaki.
There was nothing they could do at this point, that they had to surrender. It's just an absolutely devastating moment for Japan.
The worst war in human history was finally over, perhaps years before conventional fighting would have ended.
It's an extraordinary testament to the American ability to achieve something in a very short period of time, and the knowledge that there was something that needed to happen that was sort of bigger than these individuals.
In the Manhattan Project, over 100,000 American scientists, soldiers, and civilians pulled together, and the secret never leaked.
Which is why it's not just an engineering achievement, it's an administrative achievement, it's an economic achievement. It's everything that America did best, all in one place and all at one time.
Back in 1941, heavy rain led to major flooding for the Arkansas River. It was the 60-block furniture manufacturing district and the 50-block residential district were both under 2 to 6 feet of water. That in Fort Smith. 1,500 farmers from Oklahoma and Arkansas took refuge in the city after their properties were flooded in the aftermath. The Missouri Pacific Railroad had to reroute its freight traffic in eastern Arkansas to avoid the flood tracks, and several levees were broken, with thousands of acres of farmland completely swamped.
How
hello to our viewers in the Netherlands. Thanks for watching Fox News on KNIPPR. If you want the latest reports from our correspondents, visit foxnews.com and foxbusiness.com.
The Evening Edit with Elizabeth McDonald.
One of the biggest goals of the show is to look out for Americans. We pull back the curtain and show you what's really going on.
Elizabeth McDonald is breaking the biggest stories. The Evening Edit on Fox Business. Invested in you.
All right. First up, let's talk about Donald Trump calling out Japan and China for currency manipulation. Anyway, we've got Kevin Hassett, former chair of the Council of Economic Advisors. There he is out there in Stanford University. Here's Trump's Truth Social posting. The dollar has just hit a 34-year high against the yen, a total disaster for the U.S. When I was president, I spent a good deal of time telling Japan and China, in particular, you can't do that. I put limits on both of them, et cetera, et cetera. We won't read the whole thing. We will put up on the full screen. The dollar is worth now over 155 yen, something like that, which is remarkable. And actually, the Chinese yuan, not quite as bad, but it's gone from, I don't know, 640 to 740. So, question here is, Kevin, is it the dollar's too strong or that they're too cheap? Let's start there.
Right. Well, the president is 100% correct. There's an academic literature that shows that the Japanese especially have been like the most guilty of currency manipulation of any country on earth for a really long time. And so the fact that even with that, that we're looking at a value of the yen that we haven't seen since I was an undergraduate, Larry, is really stunning. And it's, I think, the way to think about it is it's a failure of the Biden administration and specifically Janet Yellen at Treasury, because the job of the Treasury Secretary is to pick up the phone and talk to people when things like this are happening and say, hey, you need to support your currency. It's really getting out of line with fundamentals. And they've utterly failed to do that, just like they've utterly failed to do just about everything other than send their top Justice Department people to work for Alvin Bragg.
Naughty, naughty. Good work, Kevin. But, of course, Japan has near zero interest rates. That's part of the story. And our rates are much higher. Right. That's also part of the story. I mean, I think Japan is kind of getting away. They're our friend and they're our ally, but they're getting away with it because you have cheap exports and that will come back to hurt it. I don't think China is clean either in this, okay? I think China always knows. Right. Now, China does like to manipulate its currency. We know that from our experience in the government and dealing with the Chinese. So you've got, it's maybe not quite as bad as the yen, but the yuan has fallen quite a lot. I think, as I said, from 164 to about 174. I'm sorry, from 640 to about 740, if I get my numbers right. We have a picture of it on the full screen. So what happens there? The Chinese don't listen to anything, Kevin.
Right. Well, one of the things that's going on, I called up one of my friends, Wall Street friends. You know, it's part of my job for you, Larry, is to talk to the people that are in the middle of it and say, what do you think is going on in this currency market? And my friend is actually saying that one of the things that's going on is that because of the AI revolution in the U.S., that there's incredibly surging demand for U.S. AI services. And that so the U.S. economy is actually going to surprise on the upside. I know we're talking about that next, while everybody else is doing kind of weak. And it's making people very bullish on the dollar. And so the people who are trading this think that it's actually related to fundamentals. As you said, the interest rates are low in Japan, for example, but also their inflation is actually high for them. And so there are actually some fundamentals that are driving this. And it could be that our massive increase in export of digital services is in part, you know, creating a boom in the U.S. that's driving this factor as well.
So the Hotlanta Fed is saying that the first quarter, which ended March 31st, that GDP will be released on Thursday. They're guesstimating 2.9%. So it'll be another strong quarter. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm actually above that. I think I'm sort of almost 3.5-y. And so I think it's actually going to surprise on the upside. And again, one of the things that I think is going on is that the AI revolution is showing up in productivity. It's showing up in services demand and exports of services and so on. And so my expectation is that the number is going to surprise on the upside by quite a bit.
Inflation may also surprise on the upside. I mean, a lot of this GDP stuff, I grant you the AI applications are helping productivity and so forth, profit margins. But, you know, they're spending, the government is spending a fortune. They're stimulating consumer demand, not business. And that shows up as a big GDP. But inflation was, the CPI was 4.5% at an annual rate in January, February, and March. That's a bad number.
Right. And that's what happens when you spend like a drunken sailor, right, is that you get a short-term boom and then you get inflation. And the problem, of course, is that this massive increase in spending by Joe Biden is ultimately going to have to be paid for by somebody. And at the point that you try to pay for this in some way, unless you do it with the big supply side tax cut and lots of growth, then there's going to be a big cost to it. And, my estimate of the Biden spending, like, again, is that it's about $1 trillion higher than you and I thought it would be. This year. And I think that that's a major, major factor that's sort of keeping the economy afloat, but also driving inflation higher and higher. And so real incomes are declining because inflation is surprising on the upside. And that's really what Bidenomics is all about.
Well, I think we should have a big supply side tax cut and more growth. Oh, wait a second. You just said that.
Yeah, I don't know where you got that.
I don't know where I got that either. Kevin Hassett, the best of the best. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Talk soon.
Good to see you there.
Now I'm going to switch back to this surge of anti-Semitism on college campuses. Liz Peek is here, syndicated columnist, Fox News contributor, and Rich Lowry, editor-in-chief of National Review. Rich Lowry wrote a great piece, "Nothing Good Comes from Columbia University Radicalism." And you basically say this is like Columbia in 1968, except this is the anti-Semitic version. Now, I know that's tongue-in-cheek, but I think... I think you're right.
Yeah. So it was a bigger event in 1968. They seized buildings. They kidnapped a dean and held him hostage for a while. But this really changed the iteration of American higher education. It was a sign the left was going to take over higher education. And these kids at Columbia today are the grandchildren of those radicals. And they've taken this strain of that way of thinking that the U.S. is always bad, the West is always bad, our allies are always bad, and applied it to the conflict in Gaza and conclude that Israel is evil, the Jews are evil, and we're with Hamas.
And Liz, one of the problems with all this is this is going to dig in the sinews of these colleges and universities from DEI. You have cowardly presidents and cowardly trustees.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that because actually what we've had since 1968 is a faculty shift towards embracing all those things that the radicals in 68 were talking about. If you remember, that was mostly Vietnam War. An awful lot, you could be deferred if you became a teacher. The teachers became professors. And basically the entire academia shifted pretty far left. It was anti-American to be sure to begin with, just like it is today. But now you've had generations of people being educated by these left-leaning people, people who basically don't like the United States. They don't like capitalism. They don't like free enterprise. They don't like opportunity and all the things that traditionally Americans stood for. That is really a bad thing, Larry. And that's what these kids have been taught. By the way, the good news about 68 completely torched the Democratic Convention, Chicago Convention. I am seriously hoping it does the same thing this year.
And you got Richard Nixon, but that's another segment.
Well, there's that.
Rich Lowry, New York Times article, Biden advisor, Democratic pollster, Doug Sosnick, I think.
Sosnick, yeah.
So he says it's not Biden's not going to win the Sun Belt swing states, which is Nevada, Arizona, and Georgia. Not winning working class votes, not winning young votes, not winning minority votes. He's got a big problem. We'll put up on the full screen these polls show Trump taking 6 out of the 7 so-called swing states. What do you make of that?
Well, one of the points of this piece is just Trump has a better electoral path, easier electoral path, and he does. You know, the Electoral College tilts the Republicans' way because, you know, you can win California by one vote or you can win it by 10 million votes. It doesn't matter, right? You still get the electoral votes in California. So the Democratic vote is maldistributed in places like California and New York. And Trump, you know, he has a narrow national lead, but a bigger lead in a lot of these swing states. I think he's going to win North Carolina. I think he's going to win Georgia. And then you got a lot of optionality, but he probably has to win one blue state, blue wall state. And Michigan, the polling there has looked incredibly strong for him.
But Liz, what happens... So Mr. Trump is stuck in this goofball trial, which no one understands except Alvin Bragg and his mentor from the Justice Department, Colangelo, who's appointed by President Biden once upon a time. Trump can make use of the microphone not just to trash Bragg and company, but he can talk issues. He will have the mic. I mean, I know it's limited. It's a terrible situation. He's being gagged. But he can talk about issues. He talked about the currency issue on Truth Social, for example. Well, he's blasted Biden's handling or non-handling of the anti-Semitics on college campuses. I mean, Trump should message, right?
There are after hours. I mean, he's not there overnight. And we know he never sleeps. So, yeah, he's got a lot of hours in the day where he can still be out there talking to reporters, making points, et cetera. And I wish he would do that. I think he should talk a little less about the trial, my view, talk more about the issues, because Biden is out there every single day going to a swing state, giving them a new manufacturing plant, giving them new water treatment, giving them something from the Inflation Reduction Act or the American Rescue Plan. It's unbelievable the amount of just goodies being spread around, which is pretty effective, right? Because he's not effective. Money talks, and it's talking. The only thing I'd say, going back to the conversation about the swing states, I am very anxious that Arizona has abortion on the ballot. Nevada has abortion on the ballot. What we've seen in 22, that drives money, and it also drives turnout. That is the one thing that keeps me up at night.
You think all that money, the handouts, student loan cancellations, you know, I'm not so sure that stuff works anymore. That is really old, decrepit politics.
Yeah, I mean, it's what they have, right? So they're going to use it. But the problem is that people concluded after the Afghan withdrawal, that was the inflection point of Biden's presidency, that he's not competent, he can't be trusted, he's not a strong leader. And that's what he has to overcome, and that's a big thing.
And all that causes inflation, which is still the number one issue. Mm-hmm. Every poll shows it.
Yeah, and the IMF said so.
Well, then it must be true.
Yes, exactly.
Liz Peek and Rich Lowry and the IMF, Lord knows. Coming up here on Kudlow, very sorry to the doomsday climateers, but the Earth is actually getting cleaner. You know, I'm having a much better Earth Day than I've had in recent years because of clean air, because of natural gas, because of everything Joe Biden has done has backfired against him. I'm Kudlow. We have Senator John Hoeven. Stick with us, please.
I try to bring a positive perspective. People may call that naive, but I've got a pretty good track record.
Cavuto Coast to Coast on Fox Business, invested in you.
I want you to tell me about your Pinot Noir project. I'm told you are planting 500 acres? That's enormous.
It is enormous. With the Brown family, a really great farming family in Washington State, in the Ancient Lake area in Frenchman Hills, we planted 500 acres of Pinot Noir, simply because it made sense. This is a place where Pinot Noir should be. And so
why Pinot Noir? Is there an expanding market for it?
It is, because the thing is, it is exactly the same latitude. You have the great wines of France are at the same latitude as we are at 47 degrees. And then it's also, the soils are limestone. We're a continental climate. So you check a lot of boxes. Right. This seems like this would be the perfect place to plant Pinot Noir. I mean, think about the 1960s when David Lett decided, I'm going to plant Pinot Noir in Oregon. And everybody goes, you're crazy. But now he's the grandfather, the godfather, if you will, of Oregon wine. And everybody thinks he was a genius. So
I talked to my son this morning. He's in Australia.
Right.
On Varney Wines, and he's a winemaker. And he said, ask Charles about growing wine in California. Because he says climate change is making California too hot to grow wine.
Well, I saw somebody sent me on their dashboard a screenshot of 115 degrees in Sonoma this summer. Grapes don't like to be 115 degrees. They don't grow in the desert. Now,
so is optimum wine growing going north through Oregon into Washington?
I think it's becoming much more viable, even more so than we've been for the last 30 years. Absolutely.
How many, I suppose you measure stuff in cases, don't you? How many cases of Pinot Noir can you extract from 500 acres eventually?
Well, we'll grow eventually to 150,000 cases of single vineyard Pinot Noir, which is unheard of. Sustainably farmed, native fermented, nothing but the grapes and the vessel they're resting in.
Restaurants and food vendors are
turning to indoor farming as inflation and historic droughts are driving up the price of food. Lydia Hu is at Bowery Farming in New Jersey. And Lydia, my question to you is, what exactly makes it cheaper to farm indoors?
Yeah, hi, Ashley. It might not be cheaper just yet, but the indoor farmers say it's a more stable and secure food supply chain, which is really important to understanding how this works. It's called vertical farming. You can see trays of plants here stacked one on top of each other under these lights that simulate the sun. Here, Bowery Farming is able to control the conditions so they can create 12 grow seasons a year when a typical farm only gets about two. They're growing a variety of different types of plants that you can see, from lettuces and arugula and radishes. And they're using a hydroponic method, which means it's not soil, it's water and nutrients. Take a look at this. This is wasabi arugula. It has a little bit of a spice when you bite into it. They get that spice by what they say, stressing the plant out. Here's an explanation of what that process looks like.
And what stresses the plant out is exposing it to more intensity and longer duration of light. And so we are able, again, to optimize that recipe because we control every aspect or input into the plant's growing, and we are able to hit the exact flavor profile we want.
Now, controlling the environment means that Bowery Farming can produce more food two times faster, Ashley. And one square foot of land, they say they can grow 100 times more lettuce when you compare that to a traditional farm. So we're talking about higher quantities of food. You know, right now we're in New Jersey, like you said, so all of the food here is supplying the tri-state region. They say projecting into the future, they see indoor farming's coming to all major cities, supplying and fortifying local food supply chains there. Ashley, back to you.
Very interesting. Yeah, makes sense. And it's very productive. Lydia, thank you very much.
All right, so newsflash to the Biden climate people. Guess what? The United States is actually getting cleaner. Anyway, joining us, Senator John Hoeven of North Dakota. Senator Hoeven, great to see you again, sir. I'm looking at some numbers. It's just very interesting. GDP is up 800%. This is in the last 40 or so years, while carbon emissions are actually down 60%. And, you know, the difficult things like lead and particulates, those are even down by more. I mean, we've done a good job, and I think it has a lot to do with natural gas, which, unfortunately, the Bidens hate. Senator, do you read me?
Well, Larry, you cut out on me for a minute, but your point's well made. We're producing energy with great, we have the best environmental standards anywhere, and we're producing energy from a lot of different sources, and we can continue to do that. But the Biden administration has got to stop putting this regulatory blizzard, this regulatory burden on our energy producers. You know, we need to remove the handcuffs, and we can produce a lot more energy with the latest, greatest technologies that give us not only good environmental stewardship, but create jobs here, create national security, and you see what's going on in the world today, help our allies. So, you know, really important.
Now, you know, Senator, what I don't get is their obsession with all fossil fuels, including natural gas and including LNG. And you have, on the other side of the pond in Europe, they have reclassified natural gas as a clean-burning fuel, okay? Why don't our greenies, why didn't Joe Biden understand the importance of that? And the thing that goes with it, because of natural gas, here, lead is way down, particulates are way down, smog is way down, carbon monoxide is way down, and overall emissions have fallen more than any other place in the developed world. So it's like, why don't the Bidens understand those factoids?
Well, again, nobody is more innovative, more creative than our industries here in America if we let them do what they can do. And that's exactly what we're seeing in energy. This baseload that we know we need so badly for grid reliability, these regulations are forcing them out of business. That's the wrong approach. We have to empower. That's the in my state of North Dakota, we're a huge energy powerhouse for this country because our energy policy empowers our industry to produce from all the different sources again, with the latest technologies. And it's so important, not just in terms of our economy being competitive in a global marketplace. It's a national security issue. You and I have talked about this so many times. And instead, his policy is driving up the price of energy, for example, oil, and that's what's fueling the Russian war machine.
Yes.
Iran and their terrorism, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, they're all being funded by Iran's oil sales. So it's not only a national security issue, it's a global security issue. And your point is right on the money. We've got the best environmental standards. They're getting better. Take the handcuffs off. Let our energy producers here at home do what they do better than anyone else in the world.
Senator John Hovind, happy Earth Day, sir. Thank you for coming back on the show. It's a pleasure to see you. Take care, folks. I'm Kudlow.
Google reportedly firing 20 additional workers in connection with last week's sit-in protests at offices in New York and California. The employees were protesting against the company's cloud computing contract with the Israeli government. This comes after the company dismissed 28 pro-Palestinian employees last week. Ground broke Monday in Las Vegas on the $12 billion Brightline West passenger rail line. The all-electric bullet train will travel an astonishing 186 miles per hour between Vegas and Los Angeles. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg saying it will ease car traffic, eliminate 400,000 tons of carbon pollution each year, and create 35,000 jobs.
These are not just jobs. They are good-paying union jobs.
And Amazon will offer a $9.99 a month, one-hour window grocery delivery service for Prime members, and it will cost $4.99 a month for customers on a government supplemental benefits plan. The fee covers unlimited delivery from Whole Foods and participating stores, unlimited 30-minute pickup, and unlimited delivery on orders of more than $35. It will be available in 3,500 cities and towns across the U.S. That's business. In New York, I'm C.J. Papa.
Many other young children across the country, NASA astronaut Chuck Lindgren wanted to reach for the stars and fly to the moon one day. He told us how he did it from the International Space Station.
We have liftoff. Chuck Lindgren on his first voyage into space.
U.S. astronaut, emergency room surgeon, and Air Force jump master, Chuck Lindgren is an overachiever who has been dedicated to chasing his boyhood dreams.
When I saw the space shuttle Columbia launch in April of 1981. And I thought, you know, that's something that I could actually do.
Lindgren was born in Taipei to a Taiwanese mother and a U.S. Air Force veteran father.
What do you say to Asian American kids who are looking at you right now at the International Space Station?
I would say dream big, set your goals, and then work hard to achieve that goal.
NASA finally selected Lindgren as an astronaut in 2009.
Do you feel that what you're representing is that hard work does pay off and America does give you chances?
I certainly faced my own set of challenges and obstacles as I was on this path to becoming an astronaut. And so if by my being in this job serves as an inspiration, then I am really, really grateful.
A NASA career that has now spanned over two space missions. Lindgren is well aware of the long legacy of many Asian American astronauts that have come before him, including NASA's first Asian American astronaut in space, Ellison Onizuka.
We live in an absolutely amazing country. It has its challenges, and as individuals, we each face obstacles. But the opportunities are there.
Lindgren is currently serving in NASA's Artemis program. NASA has said that the Artemis mission's long-term goal is to land the first woman and first person of color on the moon. They're hoping to lay the foundations for future human flights to the moon as well, and eventually to Mars and beyond. In New York, Susan Lee, Fox News.
Israel, thanks for watching Fox on Yes. For the latest headlines, check out foxbusiness.com and foxnews.com.
business, you need to stay a step ahead.
Your top stories right now.
They've all gone up. Look at that.
So download the free Fox Business app. Just scan the code on your screen.
You got the NASDAQ moving ahead comfortably.
Put the markets at your fingertips. Get the latest from Wall Street to Washington with the inside investors need.
So here's the good news, folks.
Let's take a quick look at the markets.
The Fox Business app makes it easy to be in the know wherever you go.
Let's get right down to it.
Download the Fox Business app from your app store or scan the QR code on screen now.
You know, on this DEI and anti-Semitism, look, a strong president like Trump, knock off federal funding of these colleges, take away their tax breaks, enforce the civil rights laws and the hate crime laws. No, we can all.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.